Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it. Well, welcome back to Circles of Change, and given the very nature of our show, as I said at the onset of today's airing here at the Tucson Festival of Books, it's always our goal to reach out and touch as many people across generations about change via the radio, web streaming, some 200 podcasts, and recently are going mobile. And so leave it to me to host our fourth author today, Dr. Gary Small from UCLA, and his latest book, iBrain, Surviving the Technological Alteration of the Modern Mind. Welcome to the show, Gary.
Thank you, Zara. I'm delighted to join you.
Well, and it's a real pleasure, Gary, to have you here in Tucson from Los Angeles, and particularly you're being one of those world top innovators in science and technology.
You're very kind. I wish you could tell my teenagers how important I am, and then they might return my phone calls.
Well, there you go. That's why we put it on a podcast, so you can let them hear that. That's right.
But I must say, I did learn how to text from my 16-year-my daughter, who's 17 now, who will be attending University of Arizona in the fall. But when she was about 16, she taught me how to text, and it was a lot of fun.
Well, that's great. Well, that sets the stage aptly. Let me do a quick intro before Gary and I talk about his actual book. He's a professor of psychiatry at the UCLA Semel Institute, where he directs the Memory and Aging Research Center and the UCLA Center on Aging. Gary is one of the world's leading experts on brain science and has published numerous books and articles. And it's his latest book, iBrain, Surviving the Technological Alteration of the Modern Mind, we're going to talk about today. It's a valuable roadmap for the race to stay on track during the current evolution of the brain, and a book about our brains that should make us think twice. Scientific American named Dr. Small one of the world's top innovators in science and technology, and he frequently appears on the Today Show, Good Morning America, 2020, and CNN. And Dr. Small invented actually the first brain scan that allows doctors to see the physical evidence of brain aging and Alzheimer's disease in living people. Among his numerous breakthrough research studies, he now leads a team of neuroscientists who are demonstrating that exposure to computer technology causes rapid and profound changes in brain neurocentricity. So there we have it. We're texting, we're talking, we're listening, Gary. Put us on that path to understand what iBrain is all about.
iBrain really stemmed from my fascination with technology, and I've spent my career developing technologies to understand the brain. Here I was struck by all the technology in our daily lives, how it was changing our lifestyle, making things better in many ways, but also posing some threats to how we define ourselves and how we live every day. And so I was wondering, rather than using the technology just to measure the brain, how is the technology changing the brain? And that's what iBrain is about. And I was lucky, my wife collaborates with me, Gigi Vorgan, and we wrapped our heads around this, got HarperCollins interested. And the book, I think, is important because it makes us think about what's going on to our brain, in our brains, as a result of all this technology.
Well, I think, you know, and it's a highly relevant conversation, in particular in the workforce, with four generations in the workforce right now, and the younger kids coming in already pre-wired, I'll call it, to understand and actually pull the rest of us right along with them.
It's an interesting phenomenon. We talk about the digital natives, these young people who are very comfortable with the technology. They love the pace of innovation. They're great at using it. They're terrific in many ways with their social networking and staying in touch with friends and colleagues and able to scan new information from moment to moment. The downside is that they're not learning face-to-face communication skills. You have a conversation and they won't look in the eye. They won't notice nonverbal cues to that conversation. I mentioned my teenage daughter, and I remember a conversation with her where I said, Rachel, I don't feel that you're really paying attention to me when you're texting and I'm talking. And so she looked up at me and said, don't worry, Dad, I don't do this with my teachers, and went right back to her texting. So, you know, the technology train is way out of the station. We can't stop it. It's racing down the tracks. The question is, how do we understand it? How do we manage it so that it enhances our lives rather than control our lives?
So, in fact, you've even coined this term, the brain gap.
Yeah, and that kind of, it describes the new generation gap between my teenagers, the digital natives, and my generation. We're the digital immigrants who are more reluctant about this technology. You know, we come to it at a slower pace. We don't really like the way there's innovation from moment to moment. And we're better at the face-to-face communication skills, which I think are tremendously important. Our brains evolved over hundreds of thousands of years to perfect that. And there's a lot of subtlety to it that's lost when the younger generation is just vetting things very quickly with their technology.
Would I go back and ask, though, and again, you're being a psychiatrist, but also you've studied the brain itself as an organ. So are there studies underway to really understand truly that there is some physical shifting happening in the brain? It isn't just the data that's coming in and coming out?
We're looking at it. We've published already one study, and we did another one. We described the studies in iBrain. In fact, I started studying this systematically when I was writing the book. And I, you know, we talk about the brain gap, where there's a tremendous information gap and research gap in this area. It's the technology has come upon us so quickly, we haven't had a chance to sit back and understand it. You know, a couple of concerns about the young digital natives is that their brains are exposed to this technology. The Kaiser Family Foundation recently found that the average young person spends about 11 hours a day with the technology. So that's a lot of time to stimulate your brain with this kind of technology. And their brains are not fully developed. Empathy skills, the ability to recognize another person's emotional point of view. Frontal lobe skills, the thinking brain is not fully developed in a teenager. So there is a question, what will these young people be like in 20, 30 years when they're in the leadership positions? Will they be a less empathic generation? Will they have a harder time seeing the big picture and thinking forward?
Well, I think for those of us that are actually employers and enjoy, though, embracing a younger generation, higher energy, you know, ability to never stop questioning the way we do things, it's important to embrace that in the workforce. But as you say, the flip side then is the communication challenges that we really need to bridge at the same time, and how that's going to evolve as they step into more and more responsibility.
In iBrain, we put forward some ideas about how we might solve that in the workforce. You might have teams work together from different generations. So the older employee might help the younger person learn how to manage a meeting, how to run a committee, how to deal with people face to face. And the younger people can help the older person with their technology skills so they can upgrade that. Because I think the successful employee or employer will be one who manages both.
Absolutely, yeah.
Now, I don't want people to be scared about this technology. I mean, I love the technology, and it's not all negative. And in fact, our brains are very resilient and adapt very quickly. And we did our study at UCLA, Your Brain on Google, and we found that an older brain can really change quite rapidly when it comes to learning technology and increasing neural circuit activity. In fact, the areas of the brain that were activated after just a week of doing internet searches were the frontal lobe areas that control decision making.
Exactly, yeah.
And memory. So it is possible that we can train our brains with the computers. And in fact, surgeons who play video games actually make fewer errors in the operating room.
In fact, it's funny you should mention that, because my 13-year-old son at the time presented some study he found as justification of why we as a family should get either a Wii system or a PS3.
He was probably quoting one of my books.
And he absolutely, and for all I know, he was, right from your book. But he gave me this salient discussion about why. He says, look, Mom, here's some older people that are revitalizing their brains by video gaming. So this is why we should get this. And, of course, I was kind of futzing and hemming and hawing, thinking, this is an argument that's very hard for me to combat. And wouldn't you know, 2 weeks later, we were back at Case Western Reserve University, where I was getting my doctorate degree, as a matter of fact. And lo and behold, the professor who won the big award made those remarks during the graduation ceremony. So, well, Jake is coming up like keeping score on me.
Well, I think that, it's important. I think Jake was right on with his point, because the brain is complex, the technology is complex, and it's not all good and it's not all bad. Let's understand it. Let's use it. There are now a lot of companies that are developing programs to train an older brain. And, I'll disclose that I've consulted to these companies. I've helped with some of the programming. And I think it's a marvelous way to help older people with memory challenges or cognitive challenges. And for years, it's actually been used to help younger people with learning disabilities.
Learning disabilities, yes, exactly.
So, you talk about teenagers and how sometimes it's very comical. The other day, I heard myself shouting to my 15-year-old son, Harry, get off that computer game and come downstairs and watch television with me. So, my concern was he was playing this game over and over again, exposing his brain to something that was a repeated task. Maybe that's not the best thing. He can come down, have a conversation with me, watch something on public television. What I didn't realize was that he was playing a game that was an interactive game. And so he had his headphone on, and he was socializing with his friends.
Friends, exactly.
We really need to understand it better.
But I think I think all of us, parents in particular, that have youth of this age, which my children are the same age as of yours, it sounds like, I get this feeling, though, that they're getting into burnout, or they're getting hooked on this so much, so that the idea of then shifting gears to go play outside or ride their bike or engage in some other interaction, it comes very hard to kind of tear them away from it.
Yeah, it is very hard. And it has its lure. Many people, I think, are addicted to the technology. And in Asia, they have special programs, particularly for teenagers who can't stop their video gaming. And when iBrain came out, I got a lot of emails from parents thanking me. Now they're going to start getting help. It's a big issue. It's a big concern.
Gary, help us understand, how would one know to spot an addiction as opposed to a passion?
You can pull out the DSM criteria the psychiatrists have, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual. Look at any addiction, and you can apply that to technology. When it's interfering with daily life, when people have a sense of psychological withdrawal, when they're not doing it, they get anxious. They try to stop and they can't stop. They hide it from others. So there's that kind of pattern that shows that it's a problem in somebody's life. And it can take many forms. It can be shopping, it can be sexual material, it can be gambling, it can be the video gaming. It can really disrupt people's lives, and it's hard for them to stop.
But here's the other piece of it, though, as you might say, and I think our children have just reason to point to us adults, and that is the amount of addiction people have to walking around with their Blackberries, taking emails. I mean, the incessant use of these devices. I made a big shift in my career and kind of went cold, gave up my BlackBerry. And when I was now traveling in airports, it was profound how much more relaxed I was. I did quality thinking. I could write. I actually spoke with people, and I was very present for them. What a concept, right? And of course, now as a radio show talk host, one of the things is I'm always on patrol to find interesting guests.
Yes.
And where do you find many of them? Who sits next to you on the airplane? Nobody is safe next to Zara. But I think, though, there's another piece of this. I sleep better.
Yeah.
I am more cognizant and aware, even of the times I do have to do the email. But, this isn't just us talking about our younger kids or children in general. Us adults are every bit as victimized, so to speak, or unaware of this potential addiction.
You're right. And the brain gap is going to go away as digital immigrants become more and more savvy with the technology. And the same problems that the natives are struggling with, the immigrants are beginning to have to confront and address. Now, you know, the email is terrific. It allows us to stay in touch and be so efficient with our work and in our lives, the texting, the social networking. But, you know, there's another negative side in that it doesn't allow us to sit back and think creatively, to think outside the box. There's a process where, you know, new ideas are vetted in the social network and shot down. So that's another issue that's being debated, whether the technology, particularly the social networking, is somehow having a negative effect on our ability to come up with new ideas and be creative.
Well, because you'd hear on the opposite side, though, that a lot of these open sourcing events and group events, though, purportedly bring forth more creative and innovative ideas, but it's still, though, having to take action, vet them, rationalize them to move forward. There's where that management challenge will always be there.
Yeah, and I think that it's again, it's a balance. I like your description of what it feels like. I have the same experiences. You know, sometimes I go to a face-to-face meeting, and it's fun. I mean, I just tell people it's great to sit down and talk, because we all spend so much time with the computers now, because it has become an important part of our social and our professional lives.
But here's another challenge, though. Go to those meetings and watch how people have been getting really good of having their hands working under the table, still BlackBerrying. So if you start a meeting and say, okay, everybody, devices on table, hit the button that says off. And how uncomfortable that is for a lot of people.
It is, and it's kind of insulting to people when they're not paying full attention, just as I described with my daughter. It's it's something we need to be more cognizant of, because it's having a negative effect on our lives. Now, there's a whole young people when they date, it's a whole new thing. Do they take the text on a first date? How do you have? What is the social norm here? Emily Post, help us.
That's right. Let alone, of course, those of us in the working world with email, how, you know, someone can send you an email that's done in all caps and you feel like they're shouting at you and they're angry, when in essence, you know, they may have very difficult time seeing, so they have to type in all caps. So
we have in iBrain, we have a chapter, the technology toolkit, mostly for the digital immigrants. But we have 12 pages, I think, just on email etiquette, how you can use it more effectively and not shout at people and use it safely. I mean, there's a sense of informality with email.
Yeah.
People don't punctuate properly, and they say things they shouldn't. I mean, they let their guard down. Companies have been brought down by single emails where people have been indiscreet.
Yes, in fact, you always have to caution people in email that you be prepared that any email you send could end up on the front page of the LA Times or the New York Times. That should
That's
be
right.
your acid test.
Better off just leaving a voice message or talk to somebody.
Yeah, better yet. Yeah, in fact, better yet, probably go walk down, because their cube or their office might be right down the hall from you.
Yeah.
Because that's the other dynamic, of course, is, you know, we talked earlier about now the empathy skills, the social skills, how many companies don't even have people go to the cafeteria for lunch anymore. They might go to get their food and take it back to their desk so they can continue on that, you know, that drum and that productivity path, they think is productivity, at least, that, again, is getting in the way, though, of some of the best creative time, which happens, you know, in downtime.
Yeah, and we, you know, we become technologically lazy in a way. I mean, it's just so easy to shoot off that email. You don't have to stand up and walk into the next office. Or people do it with IM. You know, they're in constant contact with each other with instant messaging. So it's, you know, it's changing who we are. And I think there's a threat to that, of how we define our humanity. And to me, the key is balance, is to make sure we have offline time, that we don't lose touch with these simple pleasures that define who we are.
So, Gary, what you're really challenging us in your book and your ongoing, all these different facets of your work with the brain and aging, is to really watch for what I call attention deficits then. That's one of the outcomes, right?
Yeah, there are studies certainly pointing to worse attention span correlating with more technology exposure. In fact, the American Academy of Pediatrics recommends no video gaming or no videotapes and no television for children under two because of these concerns and the risk of ADHD symptoms. There's also something we've been alluding to, what's been termed partial continuous attention. And what that is we're always, you know, we can't focus on our conversation because we're scanning the environment for that next ping of new information that is more exciting. And our brains sort of crave that.
And so, you know, so you're challenging us that we almost have to then have a conscious mechanism that's telling us don't scan or slow down.
Yeah, we have to really tell ourselves, we have to teach ourselves not to do that, because there is, you know, there's a principle in psychology, operant conditioning, where it tells us that the consequence of a behavior will reinforce it.
Yes.
And so if you look at email or IMing, you know, email, you check an email, and the average email is boring, or it's spam, or some work task you're not interested in doing. And you check it, your email a few times, but then every once in a while you get one of these great emails where it's a funny joke from a friend, or it's great news about this or that. And that pattern of behavior and consequence is very reinforcing. It makes us want to keep checking and keep scanning the environment, as opposed to every email or every IM being a pleasurable experience. Think about this. If most people, or a lot of people, take a nice warm shower or hot shower in the morning. It's very pleasant, but we don't pay attention to it. But if you go camping for a week and you have a hot shower, it is wonderful. You really notice it.
That's exactly right. Well, Gary, before we run out of time, my question for you, kind of to wrap up, would be, what's your hopes for your book, that it's going to stir things up, open up new doors for research, attract others to the conversation? Where do you think this is all headed?
Well, I think those are my hopes, and the hopes are being fulfilled, because it really has stimulated some incredible discussion. I've been going around the country, around the world, talking about these issues. There's huge interest, and it's a global issue, because it's as much a problem in Asia and Europe as it is here in the U.S., and not just a problem, but as much of a potential upside for all of us.
Right, exactly. In fact, it could be a help to level the playing field, particularly for those in undeveloped countries that don't have access to the richness of the background, and also just this whole addition of culture and expansion of culture impact.
Well, it's something that's very personal. We've talked about the feelings that we experience as a result of the technology, but it's also global, and it's bringing our world together. I mean, we're very close, in very close contact with people everywhere as a result of this technology.
Very good. Well, Dr. Gary Small from UCLA and author of iBrain, Surviving the Technological Alteration of the Modern World and the Modern Mind, excuse me, thank you so much for joining us, and it's a real pleasure. Thanks for coming over to Tucson also to be part of our Festival of Books this weekend.
It's a delight. Thank you.
Actually, thank you very much. Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it, going places you hadn't dreamed were possible. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsongroup.com or toll-free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, helping others unleash potential through transformational change. 1-877-544-2580.